The Honorable Chief Justice and Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of California. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court sitting en banc is now in session. Please be seated.
Good morning. Welcome to oral argument. Before I have the clerk call the calendar, we'd like to welcome some of our visitors in the courtroom and in the overflow auditorium at the lower level. A group of international students from the University of San Francisco with Professor Lonnie Verotsko. Are you here in this room? Welcome. We also welcome the moot court class from the University of San Francisco, Professor Amy Flynn. Good morning. And the immigration law class from UC Hastings, Professor Richard Boswell. Welcome. Clerk may call the calendar.
Good morning. The Supreme Court of California is sitting in San Francisco on Wednesday morning, September 4th, 2013, at 9 a.m. Case number S202512, N. Ray Sergio C. Garcia on admission. For moving party, Committee of Bar Examiners of the State of California, James Wagstaff.
Present, Your Honor.
For appellant, Sergio C. Garcia, Jerome Fishkin.
Present, Your Honor.
For amicus curiae, California Attorney General Kamala D. Harris, Ross Moody.
Ready.
For amicus curiae, United States of America, Daniel Penning.
Ready.
Case number S201619, Badrudin Kurwa, plaintiff and appellant versus Mark D. Hislinger, et al., defendants and respondents. For respondents, Dale B. Goldfarb.
Ready, Your Honor.
For appellant, Robert S. Burstein.
Ready, Your Honor.
Case number S204387, Elaine Vasquez, petitioner, versus Workers' Compensation Appeals Board and Warehouse Demo Services, et al., respondents. For respondents, Christina J. Imre.
Ready, Your Honor.
For petitioner, John A. Mendoza.
Ready, Your Honor.
For amicus curiae, California Applicants Attorneys Association, Charles R. Rendell.
Ready, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, I'm James Wagstaff, appearing on behalf of the Committee of Bar Examiners of the State Bar of California. This case raises the ever-vital question whether there is or should be a rule requiring the blanket screening and rejection of bar applicants solely on the basis of their immigration status.
Mr. Wagstaff, as I see it, the important issue before the court pertains to a federal statute. And I think it's section 1621 of, what is it, 8 U.S. Code. And I presume that eventually in the course of your argument to this court, you would focus on certain phrases in that particular provision. First of all, let's make it easy. Generally, what does this particular federal statute prohibit?
What this federal statute prohibits, Your Honor, actually is allowed, of course, because the statute itself allows states to enact laws. But as to situations where the law is not enacted, Your Honor, it says that states shall not give public benefits that are of a particular type, including professional licenses, that are provided by an agency of the state or by appropriated funds. Those are our terms that we're looking at.
And I presume that initially you're going to focus on an agency of the state.
Well, I am, Your Honor. But perhaps I should start with that very, how do we read the statute? Because it's a statute by which is attempting to take away existing police power, we have to ask ourselves whether a federal statute can be read to take away long-existing plenary power in the absence of clear and manifest language. That's the prism through which we analyze the statute.
Just to unclear my personal confusion, would you be kind enough to explain to me, in reading the statute, the federal statute, 1621, it does allow the state to do something contrary to that federal statute. Is my construction correct?
It is, Your Honor.
All right, next question.
That's why people have called this an authorizing statute.
Next question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you point to any particular California legislative act that goes completely contrary to the federal statute and does allow what you are asking this court to allow?
As to a legislative act, Your Honor, I cannot. I can simply say, however, that the statute uses the word law, not statute. Law, of course, I teach civil procedure, first day of class.
No.
What a law. A law can be, of course.
So we can make up the law.
You can, Your Honor.
Mr. Wagstaff?
Really?
Mr. Wagstaff, let me ask you. We're here to decide congressional intent.
Yes, Your Honor.
Of a 1996 statute contained in an act, in a portion of the act called Restricting Welfare and Public Benefits for Aliens, end quote. And just so we're clear, we're talking about 1621-1CA, and that whole statute of 1621 expressly denies public benefits from certain, quote-unquote, language of the statute, aliens. And that includes public benefits under A, C1A, and C1B. But the one we're concerned about today is whether or not professional license is prohibited. And it's clear that the statute prohibits professional licenses provided by a state agency, that's one prong, or professional licenses by appropriated state funds. Are we on the same page here for what we're doing
here? You are. Yes, we are, Your Honor.
So why is it that this statute doesn't preclude us from granting the license here?
Thank you, Your Honor. Section 1621 does not, as is required, clearly and manifestly displace this court's long-established plenary power to license lawyers. And if I may explain. Since the founding of the Republic, the power to license lawyers rests with state courts. No question about that. It's the core sovereign power of states. And the Supreme Court and this court of Martinez has told us, when we look at a federal statute to see whether they intended to take away core power, we ask ourselves, did they do so in manifest and express terms through, in the language of the Supreme Court, unmistakably clear language, a plain statement?
What's not clear in this statute, which provides that aliens or non-immigrants not documented are not eligible for any state benefit, including a professional license? What is not clear there?
It has two qualifications, Your Honor. First, it is only if the license is provided by an agency. Let's start with that one.
All right.
Agency. Agency, I think no one here is arguing that the Supreme Court of the state of California is an agency.
Ah, wait a minute. That's an interesting issue that you raised. Okay. And again, I need clarification from you and, of course, from the other attorneys who will be at the podium. What you do have in support of your position is, I'm trying to find the particular case that you refer to in your briefs, where you point out that the word agency, when one takes a look at other federal statutes, does not include the courts and is limited to the executive at branch administrative agencies. Right so far?
Yes, Your Honor.
Ah, but
the Supreme Court has told us that in the Hubbard decision.
Yes, Hubbard, 1995 decision.
Yes.
And there's also a federal statutory provision, 5 U.S.C. section 551, paren 1, end of paren, defining agency for purposes of the Federal Administrative Procedure Act to exclude federal courts. Fine so far. You've got that on your side. But then we take a look at other sources. And it appears that 22 U.S.C. section 661, 6106 paren 1 says the term agency of the United States government includes any court of the judicial branch. And taking a look at California law, Government Code Section 3202 The term state agency includes every state office, department, division, bureau, board, commission, superior court, court of appeal, and the Supreme Court. My approach, and this is, I'm just talking about my view, which may be completely wrong, and that's why the attorneys are here to correct me. It would appear that given the ambiguity as to what the word agency means, as used in section 1621 of the federal statute, there appears to be ambiguity. Once there is ambiguity, we apply well-established rules of statutory construction. We then have to figure out what was congressional intent in this particular instance, and I presume we can then also take a look at the legislative history pertaining to the eventual enactment of the statute here. And what was the purpose that Congress had in mind when it enacted Section 1621?
Your Honor, 1601, which is the lead-in...
1621,
Your Honor. Your Honor, I think with respect to the definition of agency, this Court has told us repeatedly you use...
I'm talking about the purpose. Would we correct to say that when one takes a look at what may have been behind the congressional intent is the restriction of the availability of public benefits to those people who are not lawfully here, thus presumably reducing the incentive to come into the United States unlawfully? Is that... I'm trying to figure out what the purpose was of Congress.
The first word of the purpose section, 1601, is self-sufficiency. Is the government funding the benefit? Is it through funding the benefit? In this case, of course, the facts show that the government is not funding the benefit because the
Well, you're skipping to the second prong at this point.
I was asked about the purpose of the statute, but if I could, the usual and ordinary meaning of agency does not include courts.
Mr. Wagstaff, if you will forgive me for interrupting you, what is the general purpose, or what was the general purpose behind the congressional intent? At this point, I am not focusing on agency. That is afterwards.
The purpose of the statute is as written, is if a benefit is provided by an agency or if the benefit is provided by the appropriation. That's the purpose of the statute, designed to encourage self-reliance of those who are undocumented immigrants.
I have a couple questions.
Please, Your Honor.
First of all, congressional intent is paramount in this case.
It is, Your Honor.
And is there anything in the history, the congressional history, that would indicate that Congress wanted to parcel out a license to practice law as opposed to a license to practice medicine, a license to conduct nursing services, a license to teach? Is there anything at all that you can point to that would indicate that Congress felt that a license to practice law should be treated differently?
Yes, Your Honor. Because of the manner in which the Congress knows and this Court and the Supreme Court of the United States have said we interpret laws, you don't assume a law applies to a lawyer if it's taking away sovereign power from the state, such as licensing. Congress must be express in saying it. So were they? I've been carrying this statute around for some weeks. It says of an agency, it could have easily said, and of a court, a license provided by a court.
Well, I'm talking about specific language. I mean, you know, we can look at the term agency and argue whether that covers courts or not. I'm raising the issue of whether there's any congressional history, legislative history, that sets aside a law license in a separate category from any other type of professional license.
Your Honor, there's no legislative history either way, and I think that answer then informs us.
Well, let me stop.
Of course.
You answered Justice Baxter's question that there isn't any express language, but you also, when quoting the national policy on immigration contained in the Section 1601, it also contains a provision that says, it continues to be the immigration policy of the U.S. that aliens within the national borders not depend on public resources to meet their needs, but rather rely on their own capabilities and the resources of their families and private organizations. That's what it says, does it not?
It does,
In the language of intent in Section 1601.
It does, Your Honor.
So how does that statement by Congress that aliens within our borders be self-reliant, but rely on families, capabilities, their own resources, and private organizations as opposed to the judicial branch?
Because, Your Honor, we start, that of course is one of the purposes, to encourage self-reliance, to not take tax dollars to pay for somebody's
right.
monetary benefits. In this case, of course, because it's self-funded, we don't have that. But if I may, we have to read the statute and its words through the prism of reading preemption and supremacy clause statutes. We don't ask ourselves, did they mean to exclude lawyers? That's not the law. The law is, if it's state sovereign power, we ask ourselves, did they mean to include lawyers?
Mr. Wagstaff?
Yes, Your Honor.
I want to take you back, before we get so far away from it that everyone has forgotten it, the answer to what I thought your answer to Justice Corrigan's question was, we, meaning this court, get to make up the law. Did you really say that?
No, Your Honor, I didn't say make up the law. I said that Subdivision D authorizes states to provide benefits if Subdivision C applies, which, as Your Honor knows from our briefing and my argument, we believe it does not, because it does not expressly identify professionals, and I can go there. But as to D, Your Honor, it says the state can have enactment of law. One of two things happens. Either they meant...
Has there been any enactment of law in California that governs this case?
There has not been, Your Honor, until today. And I say that because enactment of a law, if Congress meant to include law licenses in C, which we believe it clearly did not because historically they didn't reference courts.
Your answer is no?
The answer is that...
Until today?
If there's a requirement that we get to D...
Who is acting?
This court would be acting, as it does, as it has throughout... I've been in this court several times where the court has created rules of court in the case itself, as it's permitted to do.
Do we commonly refer to that action as enacting a law?
Well, Your Honor, that's the glory of the computer. Many times, actually. Courts across the country have said when you...
Have we ever done that?
Excuse
me? Got one from California, by any chance?
The Warden decision, Justice Kennard in dissent, talks about laws created from many sources. The Justice O'Connor and McFarland talks about enacting
creative,
rules.
I wouldn't doubt or disagree with you for a moment that this court articulates the common law. It is one of the wonders of Anglo-American jurisprudence. I'm wondering whether or not anyone has referred to that creation of the common law as an enactment of the law.
Your Honor, no, but when this court makes policy determinations on rules, it is, of course, acting in its legislative capacity.
That's Mr. Wagstaff,
yes,
do you agree with me? Two questions. Do you agree with me that 1621D, when it talks about enactment of a state law, is a bit ambiguous? So first question, why is the judicial branch not a state agency when we're in 1621C1A, but we are one in 1621D? That's my first question.
Okay.
And my second question is, given the ambiguity, the House Conference Report on this case, on this statute, says that no decision of any state or federal court shall provide a sufficient basis for a state to be relieved of the requirement to deny benefits to illegal aliens, end quote.
So first, Your Honor, the first question, which is the anomaly. The anomaly, if the courts are somehow covered by C, and I submit they are not for the reasons in our brief, and if I get to it, then it would make no sense to have a savings clause that allows a state to do it, but the one public benefit, that is the law license, which this court provides, no one else provides it but this court, that's the one item that's excluded from D. That makes no sense. It's an anomaly. That would be, in many ways, simply a gaping hole.
It's not anomalous, counsel. I mean, the statute is written to say state legislature's enactment because perhaps Congress wanted political accountability. They wanted, if a state is going to license undocumented immigrants to do law, medicine, whatever, they wanted it to occur through a politically accountable mechanism. courts typically don't have that kind of political accountability, and so they chose specifically the instrument of the state legislature to ensure that political accountability. Why isn't that the most straightforward reading of the statute?
I don't think it is, Your Honor, because the core sovereign power on law licenses is this court. It's not the legislature.
I understand that, but of course our legislature has legislated on the practice of law in lots of different ways. And if the legislature were to pass a law that said, you know, we think undocumented immigrants should be allowed to be evaluated for a law license irrespective of their immigration status. And of course, if this court were inclined to agree with the legislature, we would simply defer to that statute. There would be no problem with that.
Your Honor's phrasing.
Congress is not saying that the legislature of a state must be authorized to license people. It just says the legislature has to express that is agreeable to them.
But subdivision D talks about the state providing the benefit. And in this case, Your Honor, the only sovereign body with core sovereign power that can do so is this court. This court has on occasion used the aid of the legislature. But on repeated occasions, the Merkel case, Henry attorney discipline, etc., this court has said the plenary and exclusive power to issue law licenses and to regulate the practice of law is in this court, not the legislature.
Except, Mr. Wagstaff, that of course there is something else drifting out there which says that while you are right that, yes, we ordinarily do have that power, but the federal government has the plenary authority over matters relating to immigrations, and at least as I understand it, provisions of federal law regarding immigration may well preempt or do preempt state law. And getting to the subdivision D provision, if my recollection is correct, you pointed out to the court, after acknowledging on your part that California's legislature has not enacted a law overriding the prohibition in the federal statute, which is 1621, you, in answer to, I think, a question by Justice Chin, pointed out, but as of today, California has done so. As of today, you and we are in court. And what hasn't changed is that the legislature of California has taken no steps to override the federal statute. And taking a look at subdivision D, it specifically talks about the state overriding, et cetera, and enactment by the state. Are you still taking the view that, look, that doesn't mean much, even though the court is not the legislature, it can do so because the court does issue licenses. But then, of course, you get back to the point that I raised, Congress has plenary authority over immigration issues.
Mr. Wagstaff, you may answer the question. Your time's expired.
You
have 2 minutes for
rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the plenary authority of Congress over immigration has been addressed by this court in Martinez, which says in this statute, we read the statute's terms. So we're not talking about immigration incurring here. This statute's terms says if the license is provided by an agency, this court is not an agency, and the Congress could have easily included those words and did not. The plenary authority of this court cannot be taken away by accident or surprise or it has to be clearly and manifestly. So all we're left with is that somehow this court's salaries and the overhead are paid as appropriations, and therefore, somehow that must mean the statute takes away the police power. Let me suggest that that is an Escher painting, not clear and unmistaken, because this court, while it receives general appropriated funds as overhead and salaries, this court does not, that the appropriations are not licensing lawyers, this court is licensing lawyers, and therefore, subdivision C does not apply to professional licenses because the law says if you're going to take away a court's plenary authority, you must do so unmistakably, not through accidental interpretations of a word appropriation. That statute does not apply to the licensing of lawyers, and therefore the interesting issues of enactment do not need to be reached.
Thank you, Mr. Wagstaff. 2 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jerome Fishkin on behalf of Sergio Garcia. We submit to the court that Business and Professions Code Section 6060.6 is indeed the statute that you've been asking about, and that's because that statute expressly permits somebody who is ineligible for a Social Security number to apply to be a lawyer and be licensed as a lawyer using something other than a Social Security number. And by definition, as far as I can tell, and as we have briefed and some of the amicus have briefed, is the only group of people that fits under that code section are immigrants who don't have green cards or perhaps work permits. And therefore, that is, if a statute is needed, that is the statute that does so.
So it's your view that that statute relating to eligibility for Social Security benefits is a statute that satisfies the requirement that the state provide through the enactment of a state law which affirmatively provides for the eligibility of an unlawful immigrant?
Yes, Your Honor. Would also like to reiterate what was said here that law licenses are different under preemption analysis, under federal preemption analysis. We start generally with the premise in preemption that we first look at the language of the statute, but the preemption analysis requires us also to look at the entire statutory scheme. And the case law has told us clearly that lawyers and law licenses are different, and if there's an intent to license for a preemption statute to preempt this court's ability to admit or discipline attorneys, it must
be. So, Mr. Fishkin, under that kind of, under that analysis, then if we look at 1621C1A and B, and if the argument carries the day that the Supreme Court is not covered under 1621C to prohibit benefits, then I suppose it means that the Supreme Court can give grants, contracts, loans, commercial licenses, retirement, welfare, health, disability benefits, public or assisted housing benefits, educational benefits, food assistance, unemployment benefits, and any other similar benefit to, as the statute calls, aliens. Is that right?
So we would be
completely exempt, and the Supreme Court could start granting loans and contracts because this law doesn't apply to us.
Wow, are we going to be busy?
That's not what we're saying.
Well, then are you only singling out professional license? Because that seems to be your argument. We're focused on professional license, but if the Supreme Court is not considered either an agency or considered appropriated funds, then we're completely out of this statute and we can give whatever we want. Isn't that the logical conclusion of your argument?
No, I don't think so. I think it means this court can admit lawyers, this court can discipline lawyers, this court, without reference to that statute, can do as you did in the attorney discipline case and impose dues on lawyers. The other powers that you read from the statute are not powers that would typically be administered by the Supreme Court.
Well, that's not necessarily true. The courts themselves may engage in grants or contracts, disability benefits, retirement benefits, health benefits. That's what we do. We have employees here. That's what we do.
I would have to come back to where I would support what Mr. Wagstaff said, and that is we're concentrated here on the professional license, and that when the federal government is going to take away the power to discipline or the power to admit lawyers, it must do so expressly and not by implication, and it hasn't done so here.
Well, so is your position that if they wanted to include law licenses, saying professional licenses isn't enough, they should say law licenses and medical licenses and barber's licenses and fishing licenses and whatever other kind of licenses might fall into that category? Because if they don't enumerate them, the umbrella professional licenses is not sufficient?
No, what we're saying is that because law licenses uniquely come from the judicial branch of the government and not elsewhere, that it's the law license that must be specified, and the failure to specify the law license.
So the doctors would be out of luck and the barbers would be out of luck, but the lawyers, they have to be specifically articulated.
Lawyers have to be specifically articulated. I think we have briefed that issue. I think several of the amicus have.
So would this statute otherwise apply to physicians, for example, who are also licensed by the state?
I assume so, because number one, physicians are not licensed by the judicial branch of the government, and that's where we think the distinction is.
Doesn't that seem like an odd result to interpret the statute that way when they use a universal term? And most people, when they think about professional licenses, if you're not in a profession that's otherwise licensed, the average person thinks of doctors and lawyers, don't they?
I think the average person probably thinks of doctors and lawyers and a couple of others and gives no thought to the fact that lawyers are licensed from the judicial branch of the government by the inherent power of this court, and doctors are not, and dentists are not, and cosmetologists are
not. Counsel, what do you think the appropriate funds language in C means?
I think appropriate...
What does it mean to have a license provided by appropriate funds?
I would envision something like the medical board where the government provides funds to an agency, and those funds are used to provide the license. Without the medical board,
I mean, there is no literal meaning of the phrase in the sense that the funds aren't providing the license in any case. I mean, some entity is providing the license, is it not?
Well,
I mean, in other words, you have to read that language commonsensically to mean provided by an entity supported by appropriated funds. Doesn't it have to mean that?
No, it can mean, for instance...
Do funds go around walking by themselves, handing out licenses? No, entities do, right? Entities do, and entities are supported by the funds.
In federal legislative process, laws authorize entities, laws authorize programs, but there's also a separate appropriation for them. In the absence of the appropriation...
Okay, so now we're at a different point in the argument. You're saying it must be a separate appropriation. Why? That's not in the language of the statute.
It says the use of appropriated funds, and I will agree with Mr. Wagstaff that the appropriated funds do not provide the license. It's the inherent and plenary power of this court that exists whether or not there are appropriated funds. The legislature does not appropriate funds for this court next year. This court still has the power to license attorneys. If the legislature appropriate funds and the controller doesn't cut the checks, this court has the inherent power to license attorneys. It's not the appropriate...
Do you also agree with Mr. Wagstaff that this court should enact a new law? And in enacting that new law, we should use the policy considerations that you have urged?
I agree that this court has the power. I believe that's what you did in the In Re Attorney Discipline case, is created a rule of court to assess dues on lawyers based on an OSC or based on a hearing in a case, and that it was a Supreme Court rule, and that's part of the Supreme Court's what's sometimes referred to as the legislative side of a court, where the court enacts rules. It would fit within or without this statute because...
And while we're considering these policy considerations, can you tell me whether or not the record has any contrary considerations? In other words, did the amicus from the U.S. Department of Justice provide any contrary policy considerations, or did they just urge us to examine the language of the statute?
I think I don't want to speak for the Department of Justice. My recollection is that in the three amicus briefs that were filed in opposition, they focused on such issues as, is this court an agency? Did the enactment intend to discourage immigration or to discourage undocumented immigrants? I think the issue was discussed. How do you discourage a child from following his parents to the country of his choice? This is where family values and legal values intersect.
Mr. Fishkin, you say that 60.6 is the affirmative statute that permits undocumented immigrants to obtain a law license.
Yes, Your Honor.
Putting that aside, the underlying argument, though, I take you agree with this, and that is that 1621 subdivision D is kind of a savings clause, so to speak. There are multiple prohibitions in 1621 about public benefits for, as the statute quotes, aliens, including a professional license. But when you read through the statute and you get to 1621 D, it provides specifically that the state may provide for an alien, as described in the statute, to be eligible for any state or local benefit for which the alien would otherwise be ineligible only through the enactment of a state law, which affirmatively provides for such eligibility. So would you agree, then, that notwithstanding the interpretation of the statute thus far as argued amongst the parties, that clearly the legislature has authority to do and enact an affirmative law that permits a law license, much the same way as we found in Martinez with the education code?
Yes, the legislature has that authority, I agree. That to the extent there's an ambiguity in all of this, ambiguity is one of those things that factors in the analysis that 1621C does not apply. And it's the ambiguity dealing with lawyers who are licensed by the judicial branch, by this court, not even by the judicial branch, by this court. And that's what makes lawyers different, and that's why 1621C...
Can I return you then, counsel, to the appropriate funds language? I mean, I guess I'm not seeing the ambiguity you see. You want to read that to have some additional words, meaning you would add the words specifically appropriated, you know, for the purpose of providing licenses.
No,
that is not what the statute says. It just says appropriated funds. This is our court operates on appropriated funds. You said, I mean, these two parts of your argument are actually in tension. You say the court is not an agency. The court is the one providing the licenses. That gets you out of the first prong. I'm actually inclined to agree with you on that. The court is not an agency. But the minute you say that, you have to acknowledge that the court is the one providing licenses, and the court is an entity supported by appropriated funds.
It is definitely supported by appropriated funds, and those appropriated funds make it easier and far more convenient to do the job of a court.
Indeed, necessary.
I disagree. If all the appropriated funds were taken away from this court would still have the power to be a Supreme Court and hear cases and issue orders, and it would not depend upon whether or not somebody basically cut.
We could do it with the lights off and the heat turned down, but I mean, it wouldn't really be a court.
It would be a court. It would be a whole lot of problems, but
I mean, look. By the time we're getting into these somewhat extreme hypotheticals, yep. Don't you think you've strayed from the plain reading of the statute?
The plain language of the statute is the first question, but not the last question.
Mr. Fishkin, I'm sorry, your time's expired.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. We believe that Section 1621C does not prohibit this court from...
Counsel, your brief says that you think that 1621 is... I'm using your words, qualified, right? You think it's a limited proscription?
Yes.
Other than the law license, in what sense is it limited?
When we say that it's qualified, when you look at subdivision C, they could have stopped after the word commercial license and prohibited any grant, contract, loan, professional, or commercial license, period.
That's true, but your brief contains not a single example of anything else you think is exempt from this prohibition other than the law license.
Well, we're not aware of anything else that is exempt.
So it's not much of a limitation, is my point.
My point is that words follow the word license, professional license, and there are two qualifications. The first one is this agency qualification, and the second one is provided by appropriated funds. And what we have argued is that because of the inherent power of courts to admit attorneys, the cases say that unless the Congress either writes something that applies to every person and is over-inclusive or is very specific and goes right at the heart of the matter and talks about courts or attorneys, then it is not attempting to regulate those functions.
I think it's not a bad argument, but my point is that, okay, so you have the word professional license, which you have to concede, I think, that ordinarily, in ordinary parlance, if you just see that word, it's doctors and lawyers, like Justice Corrigan said. Now, your claim is that the lawyer part of the doctors and lawyers, the commonsensical reading, is excised from the statute by these qualifications, state agency and appropriated funds. I'm asking, if you think those are qualifications, right, on the proscription, is there anything else other than law licenses that are excised from the common sense reading of these of the term professional license, or for that matter, grants, contracts, or loans?
Well,
so it's a set of one. The exception is a set of one, and it happens to be the one you're arguing for.
As far as I'm concerned, that's fine. And the reason is because we exist in a world where your power is plenary in this area. And what we ask is, did Congress intend to control you? That is the question,
as
I see it.
That's a very entertaining argument designed to make us feel good. By golly, Congress can't control us. But Congress used a very broad term, professional licenses. It does happen to be the case in this state, and as far as I know, all the other states, that the Supreme Court is the ultimate issuer of the license. But don't you think it would seem odd if they really wanted to say we mean all other licenses, doctors and dentists and beauticians and all those other people who are licensed, except lawyers, they could have said that.
It's actually the other way around, Your Honor. And that's what the cases that we cited say. The Federal Trade Communication case, where the Federal Trade Communication said, we have a right to regulate attorney conduct because there's this broad statute that controls the way certain financial transactions occur. And we know that lawyers are involved in those, and so therefore clearly...
But that was a far more ambiguous statute. I mean, the statutory term in that case was financial institutions, was it not?
It was financial institutions.
I mean, it's not a professional license. You know, commonsensically means lawyers and doctors. Financial institutions doesn't even come close.
So my answer to that would be that the statute does not say that you cannot have professional licenses. There are all these words that follow. So if they intended to simply block all professional licenses, they could have put a period there, and then we wouldn't be advancing this argument.
Well, no, they perhaps permitted situations where private entities do the licensing with no complicity by the state. Those are left out of the equation. Everybody agrees with that, I think.
None of the words that follow relate to that, Your Honor. The words that
follow...
Well,
that's the very point, is that after one of the other counsel mentioned that the purposes of the statute were to encourage reliance on either self-sufficiency or reliance on private organizations.
Who's more self-sufficient than Mr. Garcia?
I concede that. That's not the point. The point is that there are other... You said if they put a period after professional license, we'd be done. No, we wouldn't be done, because the Congress specifically wanted to remove from eligibility the licenses that were provided by the state in some way, either by agencies or by entities supported by the state. It was the state complicity in the license that they were after. Isn't that the plainest reading of the statute?
With respect, I submit no. And the construction that you were advancing in questions to my brothers was that the first clause stands for agency, and then the second one, because it's appropriated funds, also stands for agency, essentially. And to me, that would mean that there's much surplusage in this statute, and that's not the way that we construe a statute.
Counsel, let me ask you this question. It seems to me Congress... in passing 1621, extended an open invitation to the states to enact legislation to permit undocumented residents to be licensed, to be licensed in a variety of ways. And I'm troubled, or not, I shouldn't say I'm troubled, I'm curious as to why the legislature has not taken up that invitation. Do you happen to know? Has there been an attempt through the legislative process to not only focus on lawyers, but also to focus on doctors and nurses and teachers and a variety of other professionals that are in need?
I can't answer that question. I will say that this is a dynamic field. We've seen a lot of changes. We've seen the DREAM Act recently. We've seen this court's decision in Martinez.
I would think that there's a lot of public support for this. I don't know. I certainly haven't taken any polls, but it seems to me it's a classic case where the political process could achieve a lot more than any attempt to ask this court to legislate.
Well, I'm not asking this court to legislate. I'm not participating in the 1621D argument.
So you weren't endorsing Mr. Wagstaff, your brother Mr. Wagstaff's argument?
We have not advanced that argument.
How about Mr. Fishkin's argument that 6060.6 is the can enable us to get there?
I think 6060.6 is relevant to one of the questions advanced by the court, that you should definitely divide the issue of admission versus employability. I think that statute's relevant to that.
I have a question. Oh, sorry for interrupting you. I was just concerned that your time may soon be running out. And if you will allow me to ask you a question at this point, would you?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm intrigued by the 60.6 argument. And if I were on the attorney side, I would rely on that too. So I have questions on that. Is it correct to say that that particular provision allows a person seeking to be admitted to the practice of law in California to submit a federal tax ID number instead of a social security number, right so far?
That's right.
And you may recall that Mr. Fishkin argued, well, when you take a look at that statute and the provision relating to inability to provide a social security number, the category of people falling into that class would be persons who are residents here but lack the requisite documentation. At first glance, that has some appeal, but then in taking a much, much closer look at that, and rereading the provision several times, it would appear